Okay, right back with you. Hour number two with Michael Horn tonight, talking about Billy Meier. That's a remarkable case that doesn't go away. It just keeps getting more and more curious. All right, now, you say craft are still showing up and still being photographed regularly. This is not something that was a long time ago. It's an ongoing event.
Yeah, it's, as I say, it's kind of old news to the people that are there. And it's actually, there's a disappointment that's been expressed by Meier and by the, you know, alleged ETs in this whole thing, because the focus of the case went so much to the UFO phenomenon part. And they were, you know, blaming the people who originally put out the books that they did not really focus on what they considered was important here, which is what they would call the spiritual aspects, information, and focus of the case. And though we might be able to touch a little bit on it, I'm not an expert on it, but I would say to you this, that they have very, very firm and deep points to make about humanity's need to look within itself rather than outside of itself.
Okay, now, yeah. What are some of the, and I don't have a list here of things, barbs or whatever, but what are some of the kooky things about Meier that are brought up by people who want to discredit the whole thing?
Well,
what are some of the negatives about, especially about his writings and so forth?
I guess you might have to literally help me out, because let me see if I can remember accusations or anything like that. I mean, people...
Just a couple to give people an idea, that you're aware of them, at least.
I'll be honest with you, I'm not trying to hide. It's a little hard. If something could pop in my mind, I mean, people just say he's obviously a fake and a phony and it can't be true.
Okay, well, some of the writings, some of the contact notes.
Okay.
Pretty arcane material, and they're historical in reference.
Right.
Describe, if you would, the paradigm of time that is spanned in the contact notes.
Sure. I see what you're saying. In the material, there are places in the contact notes where Meier is basically given a kind of history lesson on the human species going back ostensibly 22 to 28 million years. Now, that's a big chunk of time. What he was told is that there were, it's kind of the long, long ago, far, far away story, you know, in a distant galaxy.
Sure.
And we're told that there were developing humans who attained great technological skills, in some but not all cases, commensurate spiritual abilities. These people were rather large physically compared to our stature on the planet today. They commanded very powerful craft and weaponry. They were quite warlike. They not only did they fight amongst themselves and literally in some cases destroy some of their own home worlds, but they went and exploited throughout the universe, colonizing different planets. Of course, this is all what I would say falls in the category of speculation. It's nothing I can prove. And I've tried to separate facts from speculation. Since we're being asked, in effect, by these this material to enter the age of knowledge and leave behind the age of beliefs, until I can do something with that material, and I have it. I mean, there's histories, and they explain who the Atlanteans were and how Atlantis was actually destroyed and the wars with Lemuria, and this is the kind of thing that will keep somebody up. And it's fascinating, but in all truth, can I say that it's true? I don't know that. I am someone who's willing to give Meier and the material a benefit of the doubt only for one reason, that there is, as best I can tell, nearly 30 years of credible, what I call prophetically accurate, scientific and world event-related information.
That we can, in your estimation, document and confirm. So that gives rise to the potential that the ancient materials or the ancient references should be taken a little bit more seriously than perhaps some fables and fairy tales. And in point of fact, some of it falls right into line with some of the normal speculations. It has been long my opinion that humankind or intelligent, sentient, bipedal species of one degree or another have arisen, achieved a certain level of techno-competence, and then crashed over the millennia. I think there has been a revolving door of rises and falls of intelligent beings on this planet. I don't think that's a problem. Does Meier's contact material support that?
In spades, as a matter of fact, they have a lot of different scenarios on it. Long ago, at alternately, the planet was used as a penal environment for criminals from different advanced civilizations, so they could leave them here without any technology or means of doing harm. Something that they say we need to establish to have a true and just penal system. They're not advocates of the death penalty, but they believe in lifelong banishment. In other cases, they say some of these people may have mingled with some indigenous early developing Earth humans. In some cases, there were very advanced people stranded here when their technology broke down. Those people degenerated and then would later on be mating with some other more advanced extraterrestrial visitors. I mean, the material, it's a spellbinding tale, but it concurs with your take on it, but it gives so many scenarios of what happened that it's quite fascinating. And if I may, so that I don't forget for tonight, there is prophetic material that deals fundamentally and precisely with these times. I only wanted to, unless you want more, I want to bring up one specific thing that people can read for themselves on the site about Meyer's 115th contact in October of 78. Now,
okay, these are all numbered. Each contact is numbered. Now, let me ask a question.
Yeah.
The contacts, for our listeners, were they each face-to-face, or were they varying in terms of their interfacing with intelligences? How did they go down?
Virtually all, with the exception of some things that Meyer claims are brought to him from a spiritual plane. And again, I can't prove that. What I can address here is that these are face-to-face, voluntary contacts, some of which take place on board a smaller craft or a large mothership craft. They take place close to the Earth or far from it. They take place in his office, on his property, or in fields and meadows. They did. Nowadays, from what I understand, they only take place in his office, and maybe they take him on board the ship, but no more of the remote stuff of going, 30 kilometers out in the snow in his moped.
Is he still...
Quite literally is what he did.
With one arm on a moped, 30 kilometers in the snow.
Yeah. Or, in wintry conditions, they would send him telepathically. They'd tell him, meet us in such and such a place. He would either be taken in a car by his friends, or sometimes he would simply have to get up and go off on the moped. And, when they were doing all the investigation in the case and they interviewed all the neighbors, they said, you ever see this guy traveling around? He said, oh, yeah, all the time, in all different seasons. Well, what does he have with him? Well, he's on his moped and he's got a knapsack. And they said, well, what else? Well, he has a camera and a tripod. Well, what about the models or balloons? Or you ever see? And they said, what are you talking about? I mean, oh, they're trying to figure, what do you mean, models and balloons? This guy's got one arm, he's got a knapsack and a tripod, and he goes off on his moped, and that's it. So some of this, it is mind-boggling when you really look at, okay, one-armed guy, off on a moped in Switzerland, 75 or 78, and he's making photos or films with four UFOs.
It's eccentric, right? At least, yeah.
At the very least. So I'll tell you about this one contact because I recently had a little follow-up on it.
One quickie.
Yeah, sure.
Who takes the time to actually write these out? Does Billy?
He does.
Each time.
One hand.
Okay.
Now think about this as well.
I just want to make that clear.
This is so bizarre. It occurred to me just the other day. The German language, unlike English, has lots and lots of capital letters in it. So you might have a sentence or a paragraph where we would only have one capital letter here or there at the beginning or a name because I think nouns or what have you are capitalized. Here's a guy with virtually with one finger going back and forth and transcribing sometimes dozens of pages at a time of these conversations. And on top of everything else, while he's ostensibly making folks models, and raising his family and milking the cows. So I don't know how you can account for this. Nobody else has come forward to say, I'm the other half of this. I'm the money. I have the crew of secretaries. Just, you've got 30 years of this, and it's still one guy.
Okay. What about the one contact?
Okay. So in October 19th, 1978, he's taken for ostensibly for an up-close personal look at Jupiter. And he remarks to Semyazi about, the rings of Jupiter, that's interesting, And she said, yeah, your world scientists have not yet discovered it, but they will shortly because there's a probe on the way. And so they're conversing, and he's talking to her about another conversation they had. And he said, well, I remember you told me that the moon Io is the most volcanically active body in the solar system. And then they start talking about, well, the rings are composed of dust particles that are hurled off along with other material by these very active volcanoes up at 2300 miles per, kilometer per hour propulsion of this material up as far as 180 kilometers off and away from the moon, close enough so that a good amount of it is taken into the rings of Jupiter. Okay, I'll just stop with that little piece. So in March of 1979, we had a probe and discovered that Jupiter had rings. Well, people could argue, well, you know, it's too close in time. However, in 1998, Cornell University scientists make a new discovery announcement. They have just discovered, they believe, the operative word, that the rings of Jupiter are composed of dust particles coming off of the moons.
Yeah.
Now, they have a distinction. They say they believe those dust particles are liberated from those that planetary body by meteorite strikes, throwing up clouds. I got in touch with the chairman of the astronomy department at Cornell University. I had the discussion. He conceded that if Meyer knew that that was the most volcanically active body in the solar system at that time, that Meyer was right. And he's not so sure now that Cornell is right and that Meyer is wrong about the actual source of the dust. It makes a lot more sense it's coming from volcanoes propelled up than the after effect of a cloud.
It sure does. How, do you happen to know how big Io is compared to our moon?
I know it's significantly smaller, and it's probably somewhere, I know you can find that information, but I don't know it all.
I'm just curious. It's just for our listeners, it's not as big as our moon.
Not at all.
It's much smaller. Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting concept, and volcanoes spewing material.
78.
To the rings of Jupiter. All right, 1978. Be right back with Michael Horn after this. Okay, let's continue our survey of the Billy Meyer case through the eyes and mind and research of Michael Horn. Okay, Michael.
Alrighty. If I may, I wanted to mention this thing about prophecies and the ones that pertain to our times, and I don't know, you know, how much time we'll have to really go into detail. There is a lot here.
What's on tap for us, according to the contacts?
Well,
okay. What do we have to look forward to?
Alrighty. Well, let me jump around with it so that people can just have an idea. In 1995, Meyer himself wrote a document that's called Contact 251, and he presented it ostensibly to the ETs to check it out, and they said, yep, that's accurate. So in there, there were pages and pages of stuff that seemingly projected far into the future with a lot of things that would develop over perhaps even centuries. They did not, he did not put any type of time frame, and things were deliberately, they said, put out of order. Now, one of the things that was in there were actually four statements he made. One of them described a stunning attack that would shock the entire world, conducted by the USA and its president, after which there would be an upsurge in Islamic fundamentalism, and then in this period of time, mad cow disease would start to become more rampant, and it would spread to other animals, and then there would be a new disease and epidemic. These four or five things were strung right together. I think it's pretty clear from my take on it, and I've checked it, but this referred to the attack of Iraq, what's going to come up now in Iraq, and there's a, as of April of this year, what he was told, and this next little bit, you know, anybody, doesn't have to be an extraterrestrial to hold this point of view, but what they said was this: the near future for Iraq is going to have a lot of, you know, uprising, basically, and the Shiites are going to come in and start fomenting trouble, not that that alone is necessary to do it.
Well, I think any number of people can see that coming. It's
absolutely
already happening. They're going to begin to now take out as many American military as they can, or a war of attrition.
Yeah.
It's already beginning. They're telling Americans to either get out or face war, guerrilla war. They rule the world. The funniest thing, they want to rule themselves and control their own oil. Isn't that just amazing?
I know. Well, we did want to give them democracy where they determine their own fate. So, as we both would acknowledge, this isn't news. They simply said that at this point, what will ultimately come in the near future, it looks like a Shiite religious dictatorship. America is going to start pushing at Syria and other Islamic states. But the key to this whole scenario was laid out in 1987 in what was called the Enoch prophecies. Now, in the beginning of the conversation, I mentioned to you that I saw prophecies from 1981 that I read when I was with my friend Randy back in about 1986 or 7.
Okay.
And in those prophecies, they were describing, among other things, coming wars and what countries were going to be affected, and overthrows of different governments and a lot of intense stuff. And I thought, gee, this is, you know, a little more than, I can't even figure what this is about. Well, when the prophecies came out in 1987, which I picked up a couple years ago in Switzerland, they were only in German, we went and we had them translated, and they are rather heavy and quite pertinent. What among the things that were put in there, they, because this was an update of the 81, they said that the World Trade Center would be destroyed by terrorism. And after the destruction of the World Trade Center by terrorism, America would start to kind of twist the arms of other countries to bring them on board for a series of worldwide wars. And they were saying that this was going to be something that was going to negatively affect a lot of different countries. We were not going to be content to just step out a little bit, basically the way they put it. And I should put a little thing in here about prophecy, because what they say is prophecies are probabilities based on the laws of cause and effect of what will take place should we not alter our thinking and our actions. These are not predictions. There are certainly predictions in here, and you know, we've got a ton of them that have already come true, and hopefully these things are not and don't become predictions, meaning prophecies that have gone too far to be rectified. So what they're saying is that, and this was from 87, and basically they said that America, and this is, again, doesn't take an ET, but they said, look, America is generating enormous hatred against itself in many countries, and that the World Trade Center would be, this is going to be the first of an attack against us that is not unconnected.
Which World Trade Center attack were they talking about?
They're talking about the destruction of it. They spell it out, the destruction. And they then speak about this whole thing of how America will go on the march, the different countries that are going to be affected, then how what Russia is going to do, what China is going to do, France, Spain, Italy, Germany. And unfortunately, a lot of this has already started to unfold. This is what we're having to look at now and wanting to change.
Okay. All right. Michael Horn's website, and yettheyfly.com, is up there for you. Lots of material. Take a look. I'll be back. Are the Billy Meyer contacts continuing in terms of new material being generated by Billy by hand?
Well,
approximately. Four or five a year, something like that?
I think it could, ten a year? I think it could be more. The problem is most of it is in German, and you know, I'm starting to learn German because I want to read it. I get some newsletters and there's things posted on their German language site, you know, but I don't even know what it is until I run it through a translator. So I'm thinking to myself, I want to know more about this because it's really up to each group, like a language group, to translate the material for themselves if they want it. So they're not in a big crusade to say, we're going to make this available in English and French. So there are interested parties in different countries that take the time to do that. And it's a very long process because they then have to give it back to them to have them check it for accuracy. And it's a real painstaking and often quite slow, to be quite honest.
How quickly does Billy Meyer make these contacts available?
I was talking to a fellow there who's kind of like a, you know, you might say a right-hand man, coordinates a lot of that. And generally, he will get the transcript after Billy types it within a pretty short period of time, days, maybe a couple of weeks, just
so depending. Meyer doesn't sit on this stuff. He puts it out in German as quickly as is comfortable for him, apparently.
Yes, and shares it with, let's say, his closer circle of associates, even before it gets published on a website or published in German.
Now, these are all pretty much face-to-face contacts now in his office. They don't make him take the moped out anymore.
No more moped.
Does that mean someone is beamed down into Billy Meyer's office, essentially?
It is
a face-to-face kind of a thing.
And that's been going on that way for almost 30 years. He was talking about that in the earliest times when one or the other or a couple of the ETs would beam into his office, and he also has been beamed into their ship. But again, in fairness to the story, this is the speculative part. I can't prove that stuff.
Right. And what about, I'm sure he must have asked them, can we put this on videotape?
The reason that they had him film the ships and actually do video of the ships was so that they could give the enough proof, but nothing that forces people to have to believe it. Why has the skepticism remained for 30 years? It's very important to them that we maintain our free will, which is why they won't give photographs of their faces. There's some shots of arms in spacesuits and things, but they're saying, you know, it's too much. It becomes a cult thing about people. We're trying to undo some of the damage that our own forefathers did millennia ago, starting cults and religions and deities and all that, because it doesn't coordinate with truth.
Right now, the planet is headed in the wrong direction. Environmentally, geopolitically, socially, you name it, it's going down.
Exactly.
Is it not time for these people to forget about the free will issue and step in and make a difference? They seemingly are trying to make a difference, but they're kind of hedging their bets at the same time with this free will issue.
Well, here, this is the way...
How about the day the Earth stood still?
That's right.
My scenario, and I say that's the only thing that'll work.
Well, right or wrong, what their take on it is this. Once they do that, let's just say they took it all the way and somehow stopped us from warring and destroying ourselves, we don't learn the lesson, and we do not deal with the effect of our cause.
We've never learned any lessons.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you on that. I think maybe a few that we've learned, but what is said here, and it's certainly up for debate, but what is said is, look, you folks have got to wake up and take responsibility. You have empowered the wrong people in your governments. You are, like you're saying, you are going in the wrong direction too fast. And they have said, look, the most dangerous parties on this planet, they had identified as Saddam Hussein, Yasser Arafat, Ariel Sharon, and they reserved most of it for George Bush and company. And they said, and by the way, Islamic fundamentalists are a real big problem, but you can't solve it by going in unilaterally as a country under the pretenses and pretext that your country did and destroyed a bunch of stuff.
Now, that information you just recited could have been given by you.
Anybody.
To anybody in an email. I mean, that's common sense.
Here's the difference.
Right.
There's a part. They said, look, in order to establish peace, and it doesn't mean that this is going to follow and make a lot of sense to anybody, you have to have a genuine, universal, what they call combat peace troop, a force of armed people drawn equally from all the countries on Earth, beholden to no special interest, no veto power. They operate under a genuine international law. When you identify the terrorists, when you identify the dictators, the people who are fomenting revolutions, uprisings, wars, that force, once identified, goes to apprehend those people to bring them to trial.
Pipe dreams.
Right, and there's a lot of other positive things that they say we might want to do if we don't want to go through losing two-thirds of the population.
We're going to lose two-thirds of the population.
Well, we'll try to, not to, but to address your real question, why don't they intercede? We really do, you, me, the people that listen, the way that the ripples spread out, we have not only the opportunity, we have the responsibility to do as much as we can to awaken ourselves and any others that want to check it out, whether it's through the Meyer case or...
I agree, but this is, Michael, this is the age of irrationality. Our society is structurally irresponsible. Children are taught from the beginning that nothing they do is really their fault. It's always someone else's fault. We are not going to wake these people up and change them. They're not going to come around. It's not like you're going to give them a dose of some kind of spiritual smelling salts, and they're going to go say, gee, I really am responsible for all the things I've done in my life that aren't necessarily positive. I'm going to take
charge of my life. Well,
it's not
going
to happen.
But
I'm sorry, being a pragmatist, it isn't going to happen like that. Now, that's why I would challenge these people, whoever they are, to knock off the stuff about playing to people's good and better senses and a one world army and get serious, or the planet is going to be toast.
Okay, so here's the other part of it, the equation. As I perceive their logic and in the scheme of things, they say, you know, evolution and the development of humanity goes on for countless millions of years, even way beyond that. If you folks, in the process of learning your lessons, set yourself back and you have to do it again, you won't make that mistake again when you get to this type of a threshold. While you may say, hey, somebody come and intercede and help wake us up, stop this madness, the laws of cause and effect are saying, folks, unless you do it, you're going to pay the price, and some other people are going to watch up to the point that the planet itself could be destroyed.
Well, I
doesn't feel good.
I say this thing has happened time and time again over the millennia. I think it's nothing new. I do not think we learned from history to speak of. We certainly don't have access to our ancient history. We don't even know where the knowledge to build the pyramids really came from officially, formally. We keep finding evidences of long-lost civilizations, and scientists keep ignoring it. I mean, it's a game. It's pretty silly. The footprints of intelligent people, beings on this planet, who lived long ago are all over the place. But we ignore it. So how do we learn from the past? All right. Let's pause on that note and come back in just a couple minutes with Michael Horn. Hi, right back with Michael Horn. Surveyed to some of the Billy Meyer dimensions tonight. There's a lot of material. Go ahead, Michael. What would you like to bring in our last segment here?
Well, just a quick comment that what can be found in the material. You mentioned the pyramids. According to these Pleiaran people, the pyramids are actually 73,000 or so years old, built by people from the Orion system, as were many other pyramid structures on the planet. Way older than even the...
Talking about the primary pyramids at Giza.
Giza, correct.
Okay, now there are, as people who are listening know, there are other pyramids, the Step Pyramid and other lesser pyramids that are in rather crumbling decay.
Right.
It has been my suspicion that those lesser pyramids, architecturally, structurally, and all the rest of it, were probably built by people trying to emulate the magnificent three, which were built long ago. However long ago, we don't know. Can you just imagine, though, what those looked like when they were encased in that polished limestone?
It was limestone with a capping on it and all of that. There's quite a bit of information on what the pyramids were originally for, how they were used for survival peoples when there were worldwide catastrophes. But just as you say, people would have to start looking at this stuff. May I, for at least, speak on behalf of the publisher. I know that the book is currently not available. They're out. They're going to get more. But if people are interested, and there's a guy named Gene Andrade who wrote a nice book called Star Wisdom, and he put in his own words a lot of the philosophical and spiritual principles. That's a nice book. But getting back to the material, just
Gene was on the program.
Was he?
Well,
oh, great.
So several years ago. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, it's a really nice book, and just in material that has never officially been published broadly. Years ago, they wrote, prior to Reagan fulfilling his presidency, they wrote about him, and they said, and I was a non-political person, so it didn't matter to me one way or the other, but when I read this, I was a little startled. They said that this would be a man who would be pivotal in setting the world on a course for the next world war. He would arm dictators and dictatorships, he would operate through military power and demonize a lot of people and blah, blah, he would dismantle protections. They were laying out some of the negatives on him and Alexander Haig. In the Meyer material, you'll find things where they claim that TWA 800 was taken down accidentally by a U.S. Navy missile. They also are on the camp that says the first moon landing didn't happen. I mean, there's so much stuff in here, some of which coincides with other
people.
Wait
a minute now, wait a minute. Who said the first moon landing didn't happen?
Pleiarans. People that Meyer meets with, they said that that was hoaxed, and that the other subsequent ones, if I understand correctly, were genuine, but they said the first one did not happen. They have commented on everything from abortion to illegal immigration, from sunscreens to sudden infant death syndrome, from why alcohol is dangerous due to deterioration due to you can almost imagine almost anything you'd want to ask people if you had the opportunity, who presumably had access to more knowledge and information. Meyer has asked, or they've simply started talking to him about things, and he's put it down in these contact notes. So,
what was the reason given for the hoaxing, in their words, of the first moon landing?
Now,
I
think it was the thing of wanting to appear to be far ahead of the Russians and intimidate them. This stuff, although it interested me, I did not go in and really read that part and glue it into my mind. But I do remember that they've said, that was not the genuine thing. And there is so much And it doesn't, I can't tell you that it's all true. Again, there's so much material in here, things that have not yet occurred, when in the 1981 and 87 prophecies they talk about cloned fighting machines, meaning cloned warriors and laser weapons and other types of weapons that certainly didn't exist in 81 or 87, and many of which they're saying this will play a part should we be so foolish as to have this Third World War. Down the road, these things appear. They say there's two more popes to come. With the appearance of the last pope comes the fall of the Catholic Church. They long ago spoke about the scandals of pedophilia that would arise in the church. This, some of this is back in the prophecies, you know, that we had charted. There's many things back as far as the 70s, 80s, 90s, where they listed one earthquake or volcanic event or war or something, anywhere from a few weeks to a couple of years in advance. And those things all occurred that way.
All I got to do is pick one big lottery winner.
Yeah, right.
If that was enough. That's more people than anything else.
Yeah, but you know how humans are. We only learn a lesson that may not really serve us in the long run. And of course, like other people, they've said that the SARS, you know, virus is something that broke out due to a lab accident in Guangdong province, China.
When did they say that?
They said that was just April. You know, this year they just said that. But the fact that they mentioned new epidemics and what that Meyer even said that in 95, plus they also have that in the 1981 and 87. They've said that the Red Chinese will ultimately attack India, killing between 25 and 30 million people in the New Delhi region with biological weapons. You know, so then you start thinking, well, wait, they're developing SARS thing, maybe that's the development of a biological weapon. Before, in the 87 prophecy, they even said India and Pakistan may be misled into a nuclear exchange with each other, something that they almost did last year. Now, that was written in 87. So if we want to, you know, is the Meyer case true? I mean, it would be the most important event in human history. Can we prove it? Not to everybody's satisfaction. Is there enough compelling information to make one think? And if so, are we wise enough to take from the case those things which will help us individually and collectively, along with the other sources of our assistance, terrestrially and otherwise, to wake up and get this thing straightened out? Are we just preaching to the choir when you and I speak and people that listen to this? You know, there's a lot of questions here, but my passion for this is because of what I can show to be so. When I have a book here with Meyer's Jupiter information in the 20 years before Cornell University, how did you fake it?
Well, interesting conversation you related a few minutes ago about you and the, who was it at Cornell again?
Dr. Joseph Vavirka, professor, chairman of the Department of Astronomy.
Yeah.
And we had a couple conversations, and the more information I sent him, the more quiet he got. But to his credit, he at least acknowledged that Meyer had to be right about Io, and he said, you know, I don't know how, but he's right. Well, these scientists don't like it that some farmer, you know, is meeting with ETs, presumably, and taking a look at, you know, Venus and Jupiter.
Sure.
But there's tons of other information there. Meyer predicted that they'd discover, 10 years or so before it happened, he predicted there would be a comet, and it would be called Toutatis, and it would come back in September of 2004, and that was discovered by the French. It was named Toutatis. He's also talked about the two planets beyond Pluto that we'll discover. I mean, there's so much in here when you go onto the website from Switzerland.
Two planets beyond Pluto. Now, there have been little orbiting moons around, which are
different,
almost as big as Pluto, which some people say are planets.
Yeah.
Not that. He's talking about something else.
They're a bit larger, in my understanding. They refer to them as Trans-Pluto and Uni. I think Uni is also called, hold on to your hats, Nibiru. The self-same.
By whom?
By the Pleiarans. I believe they've said that's what people call Nibiru. It's not an inhabited, certainly not at this point, planetary.
It's a Pluto-sized piece of rock.
Or thereabouts. And then there's a lot of other stuff that has to do with cosmic events. You know, David Froning is a physicist that I met about a dozen years ago, a well-known hyperspace propulsion expert. He told an audience of 450 people, we take this case very seriously. We've made breakthroughs in our understanding of zero-point energy from looking at the Meyer films and from reading. He said, how could Meyer, 5 years before I, meaning he, was discussing tachyons, how could Meyer be writing about tachyon propulsion systems and presenting figures that are within 20% of the calculations that I and other scientists come up with using very complex formulas, and this man's living in Switzerland in the boonies? So this, you know, I'm talking fast because this is the preponderance of what you end up with when you fall into this case and you start looking and you...
Well, that's a huge amount of data.
Huge. It's how many thumbs do you have to put in how many holes in the dike to make it not real? That's, you know, where I come from.
Tachyon.
Tachyon.
I haven't heard people talking about tachyon beads and tachyon things for years now.
Right.
But tell us, we have just a minute and a half left. Tachyon beads are allegedly able to somehow vector zero-point energy.
I don't know if that's been scientifically proven or not. I bought some of that stuff in the...
Yeah, well, that's the word.
Yeah.
You know, there's some etheric energy that the tachyon beads are able to focus.
Maybe so. Yeah. Interestingly enough, Meyer was writing about tachyons and that stuff in 75 or 6 when he was taken on board for a hyperspace, ostensibly on a huge ship, big trip into space, and they were explaining to him about tachyon propulsion and how space and time travel is done by reducing everything in a ship to basically the spiritual energy conveyed with tachyons beamed into the time and place, and it remanifests in a part piece of a second, you don't lose time. I mean, this guy was writing this stuff in 75. He's not Ray Bradbury.
That's interesting.
And it goes on and on.
Michael, thank you. You've really presented it all very well, very lucidly. I think it's provocative. It always will be.
Yeah.
People can do with it, as you said, they can do with it as they will. All they have to do is go to your website and do some research, do some reading. Keep me posted, as I know you will.
You know
I will.
I
appreciate your time and your dedication. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Michael.
Good night.
Michael Horn, okay, and yettheyfly.com is the website. All right, that's our program tonight. We'll pause and talk.